Thank you for listening to the Shanghai Community Fellowship Podcast. To find out more about the SCF community, listen to sermons, and upcoming events, visit us at shanghaifellowship.org.
We've been looking at the book of Colossians. So conveniently, the book of Colossians, it's really a letter that was written by Paul while in prison to a small church in this city called Colossae. I like how Pastor Allen, who's helped us the last 2 weeks, and he's worked us through the first two chapters. Now, it was not divided into chapters when Paul wrote Colossians. He wrote it as just one letter, but it hasn't been divided into such since then. And so today we will look at Colossians chapter 3. The series title is the coolest one you've ever heard. And it's actually, we have an addendum to it. It's supposed to be actually the whole thing. The whole thing is no comparison, dot, dot. No comparison. Why Jesus is better than shining stars, shooting stars. I know that. Let me start over. No comparison. Why Jesus is better than shooting stars, angels, and national holidays. Better than all that stuff. All those good? Yes, those are good. But it doesn't compare. Jesus is better than all of those. So Pastor Allen has helped us to work through those. And today we'll look at Colossians chapter 3. My title for the message today is How Jesus Makes New People. How Jesus Makes New People. So when you become a Christian, and we have a lot of new Christians, I believe, that come here through SCF, and a lot of people find Jesus right here at Shanghai Community Fellowship. When you become a Christian, what do you do? What do you do? Okay, it happened one day, so you get up the next day. So what happens then? What do you start doing with your life? In a kind of a weird way to look at this, I think of it sometimes, all right, if I were to become Hindu, right? It probably won't happen, but I don't know a lot about Hinduism. I know a lot about Buddhism and Islam, so I can take a guess at that if you become. But if you become a Hindu, like what do you do? What do you do next? So the answer in Christianity. So you become a Christian, you begin following Jesus. What then do you do? When Paul wrote to this little church in Colossae, this little church of about 20 people. And I like how Pastor Allen shared about the city. It was, he compared it to a Suzhou or a Wuxi, right? In the shadow of Shanghai, and Colossae was in the shadow of Rome. And he's writing to this little church that he started from prison, and he's helping them to get through the difficulties of life. Paul is writing this church as a pastor. He's writing as a pastor to help these people. Look, they've just started following Jesus. They've just started following Jesus into this new humanity. So what now do you do? Paul started, if you look at chapters 1 and 2, with some real high theological, real lofty ideas. And Paul would usually do this, actually. In his letters, you can see a kind of a process he goes through. He starts with the why, and now he goes to the how. So it's in the first two chapters of Colossians, it's the why. Real high theological ideas. Chapter 1 is this amazing poem, just this beautiful poem that he begins with to show the superiority of Christ to all things. Then he goes into chapter 2 to show us that Christ is a hidden treasure and is superior to all things, including even the law. And then he's bringing us back down to, okay, we've talked about that. We don't have to extrapolate from that now. What do? He brings it back in chapter 3. What do you actually do now? Very practical steps. Like, this is it now, so that we can take part in the story of God. When the Bible does give directions, which it sometimes does, when the Bible gives directions, I heard a guy who, he came back to faith in Jesus, but for a long time, he said, growing up, very conservative, and he looked at all the letters of Paul as these big lists of, don't do this, do this. Like, at least when Jesus, it was at least had some love in it, and Paul's just saying, don't do this, this. And so we saw all this big chunk of the New Testament, all of his letters, as these big lists of things to just not do, and then some things to do, and you just follow those because that's it. There's a few times when Paul does do that, but listen, it is way deeper. It is so much more than just being better or being gooder. I made that word up. It's so much more about that. It's not just about being good and trying harder. And if I can just do these things and get my life right and do these things Paul's talking about, then I can have it made. Then I'm there. Then I can really follow Jesus. It's so much deeper than that. It's a beautiful picture of what God is doing in the world, what the Bible paints for us. And this is how we participate in that and have a full life. Look, God is making people new in the world. He is setting people free. He is healing the broken. He's mending relationships. He's putting marriages back together. He came to earth in the person and work of Jesus Christ is setting all things right again. And we see that from Genesis all the way to Revelation. And that's the story of God, the renewal of this world, this renewal of the world. And that is the story that we are participating in. So when it says to do these things, don't do these, this is so that we can participate more and have more of a full life that God has called us to and be the people that we are meant to be. So the people of this time, let's go back 2,000 years to Colossae. The people of this time in Paul's day, there was a lot of religion in this day. The more you look at it, there's just the whole Mediterranean basin at this time at the height of Roman culture. There's just, religion was everywhere. Everybody was religious to some degree. There was just so many cults, and it was just a mess of all kinds of religions. Nobody was just one thing. But the thing about religions of that time, so everyone had a little bit of religion. They would always go to the temple, right? They'd go to the temple, they'd do the sacrifice, they'd give the offering, whatever it was, and they would go home. Religion never told you what to do with your life. It never had a moral aspect. It didn't say, okay, this is now what you do with your body. This is now how you look at other people. Men, this is now how you look at women. This is how you love. This is what you do. It never told you any of that. So the people had never heard this before. Wow, there's stuff that we have to do now. This affects everything. This affects everything now. But in Judaism, the forerunner to Christianity, and remember, Paul thought himself a very good Jew who was now following the Messiah Christ. In Judaism, what you believed and how you acted were not two separate things. They were one and together. It was all of life. What you believe and how you acted were the same. Have you ever heard this? I think if anyone, even just if you pay attention to popular culture, you have heard, and they will know the truth and the truth will set you free, right? You ever heard that? If you know the truth and the truth will set you free. Sometimes they even hear that in movies. That's from Jesus in John, book of John, chapter 8, verses 32. Then you will know the truth and the truth will set you free. Most of the time, what people think of this when you will know the truth is some sort of head knowledge. That if I just know that, if I know the Bible more, that's truth, right? So if I just know it more, if I know that, or if this person just knows the gospel, just this head knowledge, like they don't have the facts, so if I just give them the facts, it's just if they just know that, if you know it. But in the time of Jesus, this was way deeper than just knowing. When he said, when you know the truth and the truth will set you free, he's talking about how are you living your life? What are you doing with your life? What are the actions that you're taking? Do you see the consequences, right? When he said, when you know the truth, he's saying, walk in my footsteps, walk after me, become a disciple. Look at how you actually live your life. When you know the truth, when you do the truth, then the truth will set you free. It is more about just head knowledge. It's about acting and how you live out your life. That's why we press discipleship here at SCF. Colin, thank you so much for that, by the way. It's why we press discipleship here. Because we want so much more than just to know things and to know facts. Those are all good, but it's about how do you now live? What do you actually now do as a disciple of Jesus? His followers, he had 12 guys who followed him around. There's a reason they weren't called students. There's a reason they were called disciples, and that's the best translation of that, because they were learning everything. They weren't just learning from Jesus a new way to look at Torah. They were looking at Jesus to find out, okay, there's a new way to live this out. When you know the truth, then the truth will set you free. When you become a Christian, to be clear, you become a new person. You put on, as our text says, the new self. You put on the new self. Our text today in Colossians give a clear, full, and rich view of what that new humanity looks like and that life that we now get to participate in. So Paul basically wrote here, we're going to get into it, in Colossians 3 in the first 11 chapters. Basically how I see it, he wrote a three-point sermon. Now, for me, if I just would sit down kind of on my own, I don't know if I'd write 3 points necessarily. I'm more of a, I write like a monograph. That's not wrong or right, but how Paul wrote this, is 3 points. So I said, okay, well, if Paul wrote it in 3 points, good for Paul, it's gonna be good for us. So here's our 3 points today of this sermon. What do you now do that you're following Jesus? And I want this to be able to speak to you if you've been following Jesus like me for about 20 years, or if you've just started. What do you do now, and what do you continue to do as a follower of Christ? Can we put those up there? What do you do now that you become a follower? Number one, set your mind on Christ. And we'll get into these more. Number two, kill sin. As they say, put to death. Number three, be renewed in the image of God. So another quick way to say it, and this is just me, by the way, another quick way to say it. If you get three things, if you remember back like tomorrow on Monday and think, what did we talk about yesterday at church? If you can remember three quick points, here they are. Set it, kill it, renew it. Set it, kill it, renew it. Set it is set your mind, kill it is kill your sin, renew it, be renewed in the image of God. So we're gonna get through those. It's almost like three mini sermons. That doesn't mean that we're gonna be here another like 2 hours. It just means it's basically three little mini sermons. You can take notes on it, do whatever you like, but I want you to remember this. Set it, set your mind, kill it, kill the sin, renew it, be renewed in the image of your Creator. So we're gonna look at the first one, setting our minds on Christ. Colossians 3, verses 1-3. Since then, you have been raised with Christ. Set your hearts on things above, where Christ is seated at the right hand of God. Set your minds on things above, not on earthly things. For you died and your life is now hidden with Christ in God. When he says here, set your heart on things above and set your mind on things above. Your heart to Paul was everything about you. It was the center of who you are, and your mind was your thoughts. He's saying with everything you have and all of your thoughts, set those on heaven above. The first thing, notice here, what Paul is telling us to set our hearts and minds on things above, on Jesus. This is in stark contrast to other religions that would have us focus our minds and meditate on just nothing. When you hear about meditation in the Bible, it is always on God's word or on the person of Jesus Christ or God himself in heaven. It's always on that. It's always about, listen, being filled up. It's about emptying yourself, but now what are you being full of? What are you being filled with? Being filled with the word of God. You're being filled with God's spirit. It's never about just emptying your mind for the sake of emptying your mind. It's about what are you now becoming full of? Set your minds and your hearts on Christ. To help us a bit with what this means, to set our hearts and our minds on things above, this is a more literal translation, more of a kind of a word for just another way to say it. Habitually set your mind or your attention on things above, not on things on earth. Here's what this means, that practical affairs of life get their direction from Christ in heaven. See in Colossians 3:1 where he begins, where Christ is seated at the right hand of God. So here's what this means. This is about perspective of your choices. This is basically a prelude to what Paul's about to write. He's about to get into, okay, here's what is happening with your choices, or here's what you should not now do. But he's giving this as a prelude to set your minds. Don't look at your perspective from here on earth. This is about the perspective on the choices that you're making. You need to get your perspective from heaven. Where are you getting your input from? What voices are you listening to? Don't take your perspective on what's happening here on earth from earthly voices. Take your perspective from heaven. Look at this, and what I mean by that is, honestly, every day, small and the big choices, all the choices, look at this from heaven's point of view. What is the eternal perspective? The eternal perspective on this choice. All choices have one. What is the eternal perspective on this choice you're about to make? Our actions and our choices have consequences. We may like to think that our choices don't affect the world around us and we can be free from the actual choices we make, that we can make those choices in a vacuum, but we're wrong. Your choices affect your life. We need to know that our choices have consequences. Take heaven's perspective on your choices. Take heaven's perspective. So now we've said it, and that's the prelude to this. He said, when you start off, when you begin, set your mind, have the heavenly perspective. Now we, number two, kill it. Kill it. In Colossians 3:5-8, Put to death, therefore, whatever belongs to your earthly nature: sexual immorality, impurity, lust, evil desires, and greed, which is idolatry. Because of these, the wrath of God is coming. You used to walk in these ways in the life you once lived, but now you must also rid yourselves of all such things as these: anger, rage, malice, slander, and filthy language from your lips. So far we've talked about more positive things, and it's been fairly positive. Paul then here takes a turn to say something we might not want to hear, or we might have a hard time hearing, when Paul says to put to death, to put to death, to kill it. As if he's saying, this is what he's saying, now that you can see things from above, okay? Now that you have this perspective from heaven, now that you've changed how you look at things and your perspective, you're looking at things from up here. Now take a hard look at your life from this new perspective. Take a hard look at what you're doing and what your actions are doing and who they're affecting. When Paul says to put to death, he means to kill it. That's the most literal translation you can do. Let's put it in context, though. When I was growing up, I grew up in Indiana. We live in Atlanta now. And I grew up in Indiana, far from the city, so my mom always had a garden. Now, not like if you're city folk, you think a garden is just some flowers outside, but it is not. We had a real garden where you ate the vegetables, had strawberry beds, the whole thing, big garden. And I loved it. I had good memories of helping my mom out in the garden, and she still has one. But mostly what gardening is pulling up weeds. Like you plant stuff one time. You plant the things one time, and then for months, you're going out and you're pulling up weeds. That's 80% of it, is going out and pulling up those weeds. If you don't, I remember one time we didn't for a little while, maybe when we were starting out, but you could look at the garden, and it's beautiful, but there's all these weeds everywhere. They get taller than the actual plants, as tall as the corn. These weeds grow up. So you can still see the garden, but you're like, wow, you know, something's wrong. Something's off. There's these weeds everywhere that this garden can't be all that it's meant to be. What Paul is doing here is he is showing us here are the weeds that we need to watch out for. Here are the weeds that can grow up and crowd out everything else. And we're trying to live this life following Jesus and being a disciple of Christ. But if we've got these weeds, then it can stop us. It can stop us from living the life, the full life of this new humanity that God has for us. It'll stop us from living the full life that Christ has for us. Sexual immorality, impurity, and lust. To be clear, this is any sexual activity that is outside of marriage. And I've heard many times and many excuses. I've had a few conversations on why one person thinks it's okay to live together before marriage. Now, that sentence, if I had just mentioned that and we were not in church, so we're like in church, right? We're all gathered together and we kind of expect. If I had said that just out on the street and you heard somebody saying that, or maybe you heard me at a restaurant, just kind of bring up that conversation, I get it. It would sound a little judgmental, and I understand that, but we have to understand, this is straight from God's word. From God's word, how he's speaking to us. This is to and for us. The Bible gives a clear picture from Genesis to Revelation of one man and one woman, and marriage is the sacred covenant to each other and with God, signifying Jesus' love for the church. Anything outside of that is falling outside of God's ideal for your life. If we want to become followers of Jesus, if we want to be his disciples and follow after him, if we want to know that truth that'll set us free, if we want to be examples of this new humanity, this new way to be human, listen, it might take some courage and some bravery to not act as the rest of the world acts. It might mean that you make a decision that your boyfriend or girlfriend doesn't agree with, to conduct ourselves in a way that the world might think is strange. This is called holiness. It's called holiness that God our Father has called us to. He's not only called you, he's also given us his word. And we cannot pick and choose what we follow in his word to us. Jesus' disciples didn't do that. if they were to come to Jesus and say, I know I'm following you, I'm learning how to live this new life, this new way of seeing scripture, and I get it, but there's something that you told me and I don't agree, I'm not cool with that, and so I'd rather do something else. They would never do that. If they didn't, then we can't either if we want to be disciples of Jesus. When Paul goes on to say impurity and lust, this is also our thought lives. And Jesus said the same thing. And by the way, impurity and lust are the same kind of root words. All these three words are the root word for pornography. Jesus said in Matthew 5:28, but I tell you that anyone who looks at a woman lustfully has already committed adultery with her in his heart. Jesus was recognizing the biblical truth is what he was going on. That whatever is in your mind and in your heart is always going to make its way out. Adultery doesn't begin with the action. It begins in us. And in the Old Testament, let's look at Proverbs. This is written by Solomon, David's son Solomon. Proverbs 6:25-27. Do not lust in your heart after her beauty, or let her captivate you with her eyes. Can a man scoop fire into his lap without his clothes being burned? So that's a good metaphor. Can a man scoop fire into his lap without his clothes being burned? We don't need to go on about that. I think you can see what he's trying to say. But do you see what he does here? He doesn't just say, hey guys, by the way, scoop fire into your lap. Your clothes are going to be burned. You know what I'm talking about. He begins with, do not lust in your heart. Do not lust in your heart or your clothes will be burned. He begins with the thought life. He begins with what is in your heart, and he ends with the consequences of that. He ends with the consequences. You can't follow Jesus and have sexual immorality. If you've made the decision to follow Christ and you want to be close to him, to be his disciple, to know that truth that sets you free, you can't have both. Sexual immorality, impurity, and lust, we have to kill it. We have to kill it. Paul then goes on from sexual sins to what we call social sins. So he gives a list of these are sexual sins, and he goes to social sins. But now you must also rid yourselves of all such things as these: anger, rage, malice, slander, and filthy language from your lips. So I'm not going to spend too much time on every single one of these. Just know we all suffer from these to some degree. If you don't think you suffer from anger, then you haven't driven a scooter out by my house. I'm just saying. But I'm going to talk about the last one. Filthy language from your lips. You might think about what I'm going to talk about, but it's a bit different. Filthy language. This is much, much deeper than what we might be thinking, which is cursing, right? So in English, where I'm from, we would just call it cursing or bad language. I have heard so much cursing since I've been in China. I used to spend a lot more time with college students, with Chinese college students. I would do these English corners, you know, or spend time just talking with them, getting to know them, and they would practice their English on me. But, you know, they would sometimes learn their English from a Die Hard movie or a Quentin Tarantino film, you know. So they would learn that. So I got used to it pretty quick. And I've since learned that, you know, I just kind of laugh about it. And I've since learned that some of this is just cultural. It's just cultural. I've known a lot of other people since I've been in Shanghai that are from other countries where English is also the first language like mine. And they might use a word that to me would be cursing, but them is just, it's just how you talk. It's just what you say. And it literally does not mean the same thing. But that all being said, this is much more deeper than that. We shouldn't always talk like we're in an R-rated film, sure, but this is way deeper than that, guys. The better translation is verbally abusive language. Verbally abusive language. So to be clear, the Bible is telling us it is against the will of God for you to verbally abuse other people. We've been called to build each other up and to build up other people, not to tear them down. We need to treat people in the image of God. That includes not lusting over them with our hearts and how we verbally treat them as well. It could be a coworker, someone you're in a relationship with. It could be your spouse. It could be your wife or your husband. And if this is you, you probably know it. Jesus said, What you say flows from what is in your heart. You see the theme here? What's inside is always going to come out. Stop before you talk. Take the perspective of heaven. Remember the first one? Set it. Set your mind. Set your mind where Christ is. Set your mind in heaven. Set your heart on heaven. Take that perspective before you talk. We are called to bring life, not death. So we have kill it. That's the literal words here, to put to death. You can't live this new life without seeing the old life die. Paul says we must rid ourselves of all these things. Rid ourselves. Why? Because they belong in the past. He says, you used to walk in these ways. That's your old self. You used to walk in these ways in the life you once lived. You can only move forward. We were back home. I was back home in Georgia for a month. And we would take our kids. We love going. Been several times to the Georgia Aquarium. The Georgia Aquarium, they claim they have the largest aquarium in the world. But I don't believe them because China surely has the largest aquarium. Got the largest everything. Surely it's already been built. But anyway, it's really big. And at the Georgia Aquarium, at the very end, they have this really big tank. It could be the tank they're talking about. They have a whale shark. And it's so neat to see it. It's just this, if you've ever been before, it's just this beautiful thing. They have a whale shark in there. Now, a whale shark is actually just a big fish. It's a friendly, docile fish. I've never done this, but I've been told you can go in and swim with it and get all in there, and they just don't care. But the thing that makes it similar to a shark, why they call it that, is it's missing some sort of fin or something. Anyway, it can only move forward. It can never go backwards, just like a shark. We can never go backwards. We have to always move forward. We have to always move forward in this life. So we talked about set it. Setting our minds to the perspective of heaven. We've talked about kill it, recognizing sin for what it is as destructive, not only to ourselves, but also to those around us. Which brings us to our last point, renew it. Colossians 3:9. You have taken off your old self with its practices and have put on the new self, which is being renewed in knowledge in the image of its creator. Here there is no Gentile or Jew, circumcised or uncircumcised, barbarian, Scythian, slave or free, but Christ is all and is in all. Has anyone here, I'm actually doing a bet with another pastor friend of mine up in Beijing, just to see, who's ever owned a home? Has anyone ever owned a home, be it here or otherwise? Okay, a few more people. I'm raising my hand. I have never owned a home. I almost owned a home, but we decided to come to China instead, and that's what happened. Couldn't do both, so I'm glad we came to China. So I've never owned a home, but every time when we go back, when I say home in Atlanta for us, we live with my wife's mom and dad, with my in-laws, and they've got a home there that's going on 35 or 40 years. So I remember the first time, this is probably 15 years ago. And I went up, and I just remember all the things my father-in-law has had to do to this house, like, over the years, right? When it first happened, it was the roof, the thing on top, right? The roof. It's got to be replaced every once in a while, or a storm came through or something. He had to replace the roof. That's like $20,000 minimum. And he had to do that, and then, okay, so the roof, that was good. After that, it's the gutters. You have to do them both. We didn't do them both. So he had to replace the gutters. I had to go in and help him with that. So, okay, gutters are good. All right. Now the windows. After a while, the sealant breaks down on the windows. You have to go through at least $10,000. You got to go in and replace all the windows. All the windows have to go around the whole house because they were put in at the same time. Those are done. Fantastic. Now the bathroom that's above the other bathroom has sprung a leak. And it has flooded. And now it's gone down into the second bathroom. So you have one up here. So you can't use both. You got to get one worked on before the other one happens. I remember when that happened. Everything was good. Okay, got that set. Then I'm sitting on the couch. I remember it was night one time. And in the wall behind me, in the wall, you can hear the squirrels running. And so, okay, oh, goodness. And they're eating apart the insulation. Now you got to call the squirrel guy, which is a real thing in the U.S., specializes in killing squirrels. You got to call him. He's got to come out. That's done. Okay, great. No more squirrels. Then Christmas Eve 3 years ago, I remember a one in 100 year rain hit that part of Atlanta. And so I'm down with Carrie's parents on Christmas Eve. Merry Christmas to us. Shoveling rain out of the basement. Just huge, massive amounts of rain. And my father-in-law had just made, you ever heard Man Cave? You ever heard of that? Like a big TV. He just had that made, ruined that, got the rain out, dried that out, remade it. It's all very nice now, and now the roof again has to be replaced. All the way back to the first thing. And it's just constant. It's constant. I don't know if I'll ever own a home because of that, to be honest, very reason. But this is something you always, always have to do on a home. It's called renovation. And this is the meaning of renewed, to make new again. This is what we always have to do. We always have to be looking at ourselves, what needs to be renovated. We never stop. Paul says this new self that we put on is being renewed, and that means all the time. He didn't say it was renewed that one time a few weeks ago when you became a Christian. He's saying it's being renewed constantly, all the time. There's always something we have to look out for. Being a Christian, part of this new humanity, requires constant checkups, constant renovation. We're never done. We're never done. Be renewed in the knowledge of your Creator. Two quick points of this. The goal of this renewal, to be renewed, is the restoration of the divine image. Genesis 1 tells us we were created, all of us, in the image of God. That image is now marred by sin. Author John Ortberg gives an illustration of a statue by Michelangelo of Mary bringing Jesus down off of the cross. This is called the Pietà. If you're from Italy, I am so sorry, I just said that wrong. A crazy guy back in the 70s from some politics or something wrecked the Pietà with a sledgehammer, broke it into pieces, into dust in some parts. But now it is now restored to its original image, and you can't even tell where the cracks are. It has been restored to how it originally looked. This is what we are showing the world, this renewal. The world is broken. Sin has wrecked us. It's broken us. All we can do, the programs, NGOs, and the whole world, but ultimately, it's the gospel. It's the gospel of Jesus Christ. It's Jesus who puts the world back together again. This is the goal, to be restored into the image of God that he has made us. The second point, as we close up, the context of this renewal is the church. It is the church. Now listen, the word church does not mean a building. Does not mean a building. That's not where the word comes from. It means, in the own words of Jesus, the gathering of Jesus' people. This is the gathering of Jesus' people. The church can fall down. It doesn't matter. The building can go away. When we gather together, that is the church. He says in Colossians 3:11, here there is no Gentile or Jew, circumcised or uncircumcised, barbarian, Scythian, slave or free, but Christ, here it is, but Christ is all and is in all. Far be it from me, listen, to rewrite the words of the Bible, but if Paul were to write right now and he would say, okay, the church of Shanghai, here there is no Chinese, Japanese, American, Canadian, European, Australian, Tibetan or Thai, but Christ is all and is in all. Where the world separates, the people of Jesus bring together. Where the world creates divisions, the people of Jesus unite. The people of Jesus break down those barriers, and together can we, by the power of the Spirit of God, show the world what this new humanity looks like. One of the greatest falsities of the modern age is that man can live alone. Jesus knew this because he created us in the beginning. So that is why he set up the church, the gathering of the people of Jesus. And it is in this context that we can help each other, push each other, tell each other, look at things here on earth from the perspective of heaven, to kill sin, to constantly look to renew ourselves in the image of God. And I encourage you, while you are here in Shanghai, to not camp out. I like going camping with my son, but the thing about camping is you go, you set up your tent, and it's gone the next day. Don't camp out while you're here. Become part of this community. Become part of Shanghai Community Fellowship. We would love for you to. Don't camp out while you're here, because you're going to miss so much. Make this your home. It doesn't matter how long. It could be this year. It could be this semester. Make this your home. Don't camp out. I titled this message, How Jesus Makes New People. It is not titled, How You Can Make Yourself New. Everything that we've looked at today about becoming this new humanity, about setting our hearts and our minds on Christ, about killing sin, being renewed into the image of God, none of this was meant to be done by you alone. Like I said, I didn't title this How You Make Yourself New. And Paul says as much when he begins in 3:1, Since then, you have been raised with Christ. All of this is predicated on being a believer and living with Christ. This is the key to this whole idea of the new humanity, this living and acting as this new creation. You are not meant, you were never meant to do this alone, but with Christ. Not Jesus looking over your shoulder, not in judgment. Your sin is forgiven, but he is with you. He's with you, with Christ. Like we said at the start, this is not about you trying harder, doing better, but allow Christ to help you. And if you've not experienced this today, Jesus is calling you.